Ahoy, hoy. Ahoy, hoy.
Makes me think of the Simpsons episode. Have you seen that episode where Mr. Burns gets a yacht or something and he's like cruising around saying, Ahoy, hoy. Hoy, hoy, Simpson.
We don't know whether this is a podcast. I don't know what to call this. We're just two dudes talking into the internet like the rest of the world during COVID.
Yep, facts.
So we are the worldwide leader in sports psychology and bullshit. We're two psychologists. I'm Dr. Brett Levine, and this is joined as always by Dr. Benjamin Rosenberg. Benjamin's a real professor.
What's a fake professor from a real professor?
Like, I guess me, right? Like, can I be a fake professor?
No, dude, you're not a fake professor.
All right.
A fake professor is like an adjunct professor or something, I guess.
Like a rent-a-cop.
I'm like a fucking full-time professor. Somehow they let me in to an academy. Yeah.
Yep. So anyway, we're here. We're, as we've just been rambling, we're both psychologists. We're big sports fans. We did the sports blogging thing some years back. We're blogging again on Psychology Today. We're talking about sports and psychology, and we're trying to make it, I guess, not as sort of like esoteric and inaccessible. We want it to be fun. We talk all the time anyway about sports and psychology, so we figured we might as well just do it on camera.
Maybe somebody's interested in hearing what the fuck we have to say.
Yeah, well, we like having fun, so we said, let's do it. So anyway, I think the goal of this year is just to, like Ben said, we're going to talk about this stuff, and I think the goal is just to have fun and to Ben obviously has the edge for education. He wants to share these ideas. I think we both want to, and I think we want to see psychology move forward in the world of sports. So here we are. So today's app, we're talking about bubble ball. So what sports is going to be like in the time of COVID, in kind of what we're currently discussing as these like bubble cities, and maybe the psychology behind what that's going to be like. And then coronavirus immunity and how that's going to play into players' statuses and how players are going to be treated in the future. So let's get started. So currently, Major League Baseball is trying to figure out how to do this, and I've heard so many different things. The NBA is talking about this.
Yeah, I was going to say, NBA is talking about it now as well.
Right. They're talking about, you know, basically putting all of Major League Baseball either into, like, Phoenix or into just, like, Phoenix and Dallas and, like, Tampa or something, and just packing it full of players. Mm-hmm.
Maybe even Vegas, I heard.
Yeah. Some sort of combination of like these bubble cities. So I think the first question for you is like, how are players going to handle being isolated with each other? If you're stuck with, you know, your team and 29 other teams inside of a city, not really normal. Psychologically, like what's that going to do to somebody?
I mean, I think the bottom line is it's going to fucking suck. I mean, it's hard. Like being isolated is difficult for people, and I talk in my social psychology classes all the time. We talk about relationships and how important relationships are to people, and there's this concept called the need to belong. And basically the underlying idea is that people have a need to link, to connect, to be in relationships with other people. That's the same as your need to eat, to drink, to have shelter. Like, it's just as important to connect with people in a way as it is to nourish your body. And there are studies to back that up, right? Like, this isn't just some one-off idea. They came up with this idea in the 90s, and studies have continued to support the idea for years. So again, bottom line, it's gonna be hard. I mean, it's gonna be really difficult for guys to be isolated. And they have all these kind of wide-ranging, both really large-scale studies and sort of smaller kind of traditional lab experiments that show that being socially isolated is bad for people's physical and mental health. And that on the flip side, when we have good nourishing relationships, we tend to excel in basically all walks of life. So it's going to be hard, bottom line.
I think the MLB Players Association said, we're not doing this unless we can bring families, right, like wives. I don't know if girlfriends are included in that, or yeah, if like a bounty of hookers is, yeah, also included in that.
They're on wait, man. They're just hanging, yeah, out waiting, right, for this to happen.
I guess. I was listening to the Bill Simmons podcast, and they're talking about something similar.
Yeah.
And they're talking about, like, imagine if this was like the 92 Cowboys team that was isolated. They're like, you can keep the players in, but you can't keep the ladies out.
You know, like, they're just shipping in trucks with fucking blow on the back, just like dump trucks, just dumping mountains of blow. And the hookers are buried in the mountains of blow, and they're just like popping out from nowhere.
Like a cocaine birthday cake.
Yeah, dude, exactly. Jesus.
Well, I think it's interesting that this research says, like, it affects you physically and, yeah, mentally.
Yeah.
So for guys who aren't lucky enough to have a, you know, wife and a family or a girlfriend that they can bring along, what would you predict what happens to them physically? Are we going to see more injuries? Are we going to see I'm air quoting here, like off days, like mental health days? If you can make a prediction, what would you think?
I mean, certainly the mental health aspect, I think, is the most at the forefront. Most of the studies that look at the effect of social isolation on physical health are longer term, right? So people who experience isolation over longer periods tend to like die sooner and shit like that, which know that we'd be seeing in this relatively short term from these guys, and they're healthy and whatever else. But probably the mental health aspect would be, I think, the most prominent. I wanted to mention before a fascinating study, like one of the oldest studies that looked at this stuff was from the 40s, I think, 30s or 40s. And a guy set up an experiment with a baby monkey and a cloth or a wire monkey, if you remember these from your intro psych class, right? So the setup is that the monkey can choose which to spend time with, the cloth or the wire monkey. The catch is that the wire monkey has a bottle attached. So the baby monkey is getting food nourishment from the wire monkey with the bottle, but it's getting like relational nourishment and kind of comfort from the monkey that's cloth, that's softer. And he finds over and over again that the baby monkeys spend like almost their entire day hanging out on the cloth monkey. They only cross over, and there's these cute little videos, they only cross over to the wire monkey to eat, and then they go right back to the cloth monkey, right? Showing how important that kind of social connection and that social support is, right? And that comfort is. And so guys are going to be lacking, I think, a lot of this, even if they have their families. They're going to be lacking some degree of comfort and some degree. They're going to be experiencing some degree of isolation. And it's just, yeah, it's going to be hard.
So on one side, I'm thinking of an experiment here. On one side, we've got a wire-framed hooker that has like a little cocaine spout here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then just sort of like a really like lifelike hooker over here.
Mm-hmm.
But no cocaine, and you're saying they'll go to the lifelike one.
1992 Dallas Cowboys go to the lifelike one primarily to get their sexual urges met, and then they go to the cocaine one to get their blow urges met. right back to the lifelike one.
Yeah, I think you can say the same for like every 1970s football team. Like,
yeah, completely.
All those stories about like Super Bowl teams doing coke in the locker room at halftime like the Super Bowl and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting. I think I'd be interested in pursuing like the physical outcomes of this, because I think as a fantasy baseball player, are guys going to get hurt more often?
Yeah.
I think also like they're going to cram the season into like 80 or 100 games.
Yep.
Within like a few months, and they're going to have to do back-to-backs and all.
Right. Baseball players barely get off days anyways, so now they're really gonna be just jamming them in, right? Trying to play as many games as they can. And I agree. I think it'd be super interesting to track the injury outcomes and see if guys get injured more, or also like, are they going to get sick more? Not maybe necessarily for COVID related reasons, but like, are they going to get other ailments that maybe wouldn't happen in, under normal circumstances when they have adequate rest, adequate social connection, et cetera, et cetera.
So fair point. Yep. I was thinking, I found this article on leadership, and it was, it's this study on like isolation and around this whole thing about, our, you know, we're going to send people to Mars and what's that going to be like? The ultimate one-way trip, like see you later, you know? So I think it's important. I think this research is important that like we understand what it's going to be like to isolate people for basically the rest of their lives. So yeah, a bit of the extreme, I think, you know, the Major League Baseball season is going to be 5 or 6 months of bubble city play. And I'm hearing similar things for the basketball season. Mm-hmm. But anyway, the study, Wu et al. 2020, they stuffed 4 people into basically like a a 4,000 square foot, like house that they basically said like, okay, this is your, you know, this is your Mars outpost here.
How much are they paying these participants, you think? Like,
it's a good question.
This is a big undertaking. Plus, how do they get ethical approval for this shit?
It was done in China, so don't.
Well, that's why. Okay.
So 4,000 square feet house with you and 3 other people for 180 days. But the trip to Mars is like the rest of your life, you know, 30, yeah. 40, 50 years.
Yeah, so. true.
Anyway, they stuffed these people into this house and they said, okay, this is like the Mars laboratory. And then the house was divided. And they had like the living area, they had like the biological area, they had like the, you know, the hospital area, and then they had like the resource area. And then the 4 people each had roles. There was the botanist, there was the mechanic, there was the medic, and there was the leader. Hmm. And, you know, over time they stuffed these people in this place and they, you know, they measured a lot of different things, like all these different psychological constructs that we talk about all the time. Mm-hmm. The interesting takeaway from the study was the effects on leadership. And this one measure was for leadership support. So this is the amount of help, concern, and friendship the leader shows to the other members. So, you know, it's basically the leader being like, all right, guys, you know, great job, botanist, way to plant those plants. You did great. What they found was that
all like, those weeds, motherfucker.
Grow that corn indoors, yeah. With no sun.
Yeah, good luck.
So in like the first half, I guess like the first 90 days, you know, people were like, okay, thanks for the support. And then the second half, it dipped. Hmm. It was still effective. I think it was mm-hmm. Both rated like pretty high, but it changed in a way.
Okay.
And the takeaway from the paper is like, why did this happen? Did the leader, did he or she like start to feel the effects of isolation? Like after a while, they're like, okay, plant those plants.
Please.
Was it the latter? It was just people got tired of hearing their shit.
Same shit. You know?
Like, shut up, Gary. Like, I need to hear something else. And they suspect it's the latter because they cited this other study, similar like isolation study with people mm-hmm. in Antarctica. And it was 235 people isolated
for a
year in Antarctica, which is probably better than like 4 people for 180 days.
I don't know, dude. You can't go outside fucking 8 months or 9 months out of the year in Antarctica. Probably.
We just made a point about how important social, you know, social interaction is. So 235 people versus 4.
Yeah, that's true. I'll buy it. All right.
Anyway, in the Antarctica study, they found that, it was like the leadership support was just, it just grew old over time. And, yeah. I thought that was interesting. I think that, there is some serious implications for baseball players and sport, you know, athletes in general, they're going to be isolated.
You're sort of saying like the message can grow stale. Like, if a leader's saying the same shit over and over and over and over again, even if it's effective initially, like it can sort of grow stale after a while.
Yeah. And I'm not citing anything here. I'm not a leadership expert by any means, but I think that's the finding from this paper. And I think even when you're not isolated in like a bubble, it just gets like you get tired of hearing the coach say the same thing.
Same thing.
I'm watching, I guess everybody's watching the Jordan documentary on ESPN. Yeah. And I love how Phil Jackson had those, he themed every year, right? Mm-hmm. And the title of the series is called The Last Dance because mm-hmm. that was the theme for the 97-98 season.
Right.
And that's cool. Like teams can theme that stuff. I think that's rad. But I think what this paper is saying is like pick two themes for the same season because – especially in the bubble, it's like when you're isolated and when you're hearing the same thing, you can't get away from it. Man, that's going to
work. Yeah. So one interesting implication of that, I think like you're pointing to is do the themes of a season, even if you have them, like, I guess A, having themes is important, right? But B, even if you have them, are they going to grow stale sooner in isolation than they even would normally? Because in a normal season, you go home, you see your friends, you see your family, you blow off steam. Like in the doc, fucking Dennis Rodman goes to Vegas for 48 hours or whatever. And then you come back, right? And the message is sort of renewed. But is that gonna maybe happen more quickly in isolation? I think is what you're saying, right? Maybe guys,
I think there's gonna be more
leaders need to switch it up.
I think there's gonna be more injuries. Like bottom line from what we're both saying, if I could make a prediction, I think there's going to be more injuries based on what you're saying and, you know, social interaction, basically starving players of that. And I don't think teams are going to come in with the right script. I don't think it's going to happen. I think people are going to get tired a hell of a lot quicker mentally. And I think that's going to weigh on people physically as well. So just a hot take.
Yeah. I think the point, especially about getting mentally drained, is important. Like, how much of your cognitive faculties, how much of your cognitive mental energy is it going to take just to try to stay focused on the season, knowing that all this insanity is happening outside of your bubble and that inside the bubble, you don't have the sufficient amount of social connection that you need. Like, that's going to be super draining. And I mean, again, turning to the research, there's all this research showing that people's mental energy basically is relatively limited, and that if we expend it, it's like a muscle. If we expend it, that there's no more of it. Like, we need to do activities to renew and to restore our mental energy. We become ego depleted is what the research calls it. So this could certainly be a huge issue. And if we keep trying to do things and trying to act in ways that are in line with our goals or in line with the team's goals, and we're ego depleted and we don't have our mental energy, like, it could be extra bad, right? Like the mental and physical outcomes could be extra bad, lending credence perhaps to your prediction about more injuries. Maybe people acting like in ways that are out of character for them, trying to do too much or too little and getting hurt possibly.
Right. All right, let's stick with this theme, but I have another question for you. So
yeah.
Along the lines of like, what's going to happen with players in this bubble city? Baseball players are creatures of habit. What's going to happen when you put them in a bubble?
Yeah. I mean, let me first tell you that I played baseball in high school with a guy who wore the same jock the whole season.
There's always that guy.
Dude, there's always that guy. This fucking guy, Cameron Johnson, if you're out there, he played at Cal, actually.
So it works, is what you're saying. You're saying if I want to play baseball at Cal, I got to wear the same jock all year.
No, dude, don't fucking do it. Like, literally by week 5, nobody would even sit near him on the bench. Like, it reeked. He was our best player. He was a stud lefty pitcher and outfielder, and he would rake. But, like, it was fucking, it was horrible. Anyway, so, yes, baseball players are creatures of habit. And people in general are basically married, wedded to our routines. And
yeah.
I guess the research says that that's important and that people really thrive on having routines. And so having their routines so thrown off, waking up at the same time every day, going to the same restaurants, doing the same things after games, seeing the same people, having those thrown off, having those disrupted could be really hard and can certainly have some detrimental, just like we were talking about before, physical and mental health effects. When you're taken out of your, thrown out of your routine. I actually did an interview about this stuff. A writer from the UK was asking for an article about how people's routines have shifted in response to the pandemic. and what's happened since people's normal everyday routines get thrown off. And obviously I was making conjectures based on what the research says, but I think the same goes here, that when people's routines get thrown off, the research says it can be really bad, and that it can make us just kind of feel like we're searching for purpose and searching for meaning in what we're doing on a day-to-day basis. And especially if you're a pro athlete, that can be really hard.
I relate. I'm not a pro athlete, but like, I mean, I think my, like, and everyone can attest to this too. It's like, I think your routine had to adjust a little bit because our lives have been so affected by COVID.
Yeah.
There's the garbage truck every day. It's like every day. It's like, how many days do we have to do garbage? Every day you got to slam the fucking thing, then smash that fucking
thing. This time I don't hear it. Last time it was very aggressive.
Anyway, I feel like I've had to adopt a new routine.
Yeah, for sure.
And then it's getting stuck in this routine, which kind of sucks. Cause like,
yeah,
I'm on a treadmill. It's like, I can't get off this.
What day of the week is it? Like, shit's fucked. Well, and we both have babies, right? So it's like, everything's dictated by them. And then I think that makes it even harder to, like, you have a routine, but it makes it harder to develop any kind of normal routine because you're just like, everything is structured around baby waking up, napping, eating, shitting, whatever.
Mm-hmm. I found similar results. Bottom line is, it's going to suck.
Yeah.
More evidence to say putting players in a bubble is probably not a good idea.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, hey, I need my baseball, so I'm not going to complain.
It's true. I mean, that is another sort of perspective, right? It's like, well, what good, and we wrote an article about this, like, what good is baseball going to bring to our current difficult situation? And is it worth these possible bad outcomes for the players, for the guys stuck in the bubbles?
I don't know. I mean, this is not peer reviewed. This was just an article in New York Times with Scott Kelly, this NASA astronaut who spent almost a year in space, and his tips for how to deal with isolation. And I guess if you could treat this like a case study, he was basically saying, like, these routines are good, but what happens is you work too much.
Yeah.
So I can picture baseball players with nothing else to do, sitting in the batting cage.
Yeah.
Or, you know, basketball players just shooting free throws. It's like, dude, take a nap, drink some Gatorade, go hang out with that hooker.
Go do some lines of blow.
just stop, you know? So.
But if you think about, like, what options do they have, right? I mean, I think to your point about overworking when we lose our routines, like, what else do you have to do? Especially if you're a pro athlete and that's what you know, like, and you're sitting in this bubble city, you can't hang out with your teammates, really. You can't see anybody but your, like, wife and kids or the hooker that you're hanging out with. Like, given those options, what are you going to do? You might lean too far into working, basically, to working out, like you said, hitting in the cage, taking grounders, throwing off the mound, whatever it is. That could be bad as well for their performance and maybe the injury thing again. I mean, this seems to be keep coming up, which I think is pretty interesting.
In a way, it's kind of a double standard because it's like, I think regular American sports fans like you and I are like, give us our sports back.
Yeah.
And the president and the country kind of hear that.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, great. You know, because I think they understand that it is, you alluded to our article. It's like, it is important. It's important
for sure.
It's important for our soul. It's important for a feeling of connectedness. So we're telling baseball players and basketball players and who knows what other sports to come back, go play and go sit in these bubbles and play for us.
Right.
But what about them? Like, they need something too, right? Like, they need something in their bubbles to get out of the mundane and get off their treadmill of playing sports every day. So maybe like a video game arcade or a water park.
I mean, it's a good question though. Like, what kind of amenities can the leagues provide to guys to give them that break to rebuild some of their mental faculties and rebuild some of their physical faculties too, to like rest themselves up a little bit, basically. And like, is that a way to sort of compromise between what you're talking about, like the pull of the outside world saying, yeah, give us our sports, and the reality, which is that this is probably going to be fucked for the guys inside these bubbles. And how can we provide some things that might make it a little better for them?
Yeah. And bottom line, it's, we're not thinking enough about the like cognitive outcomes for a lot of these players. And so I'm worried. I think basically everything we've just said for the last, I don't know how many minutes, it's like, this is not good.
Yeah, it's a bad idea.
Or long-term outcomes for these players. And I hope they take these things into consideration.
Yeah. All right. You would hope so.
Yeah. Sticking along this narrative of coronavirus, sadly, because that's our lives.
Yeah, it is indeed.
Let's talk about immunity, and let's talk about the virus itself. Not a virologist, so don't hold me to this. I'm going off of latest information about this. And the World Health Organization has cautioned this, but essentially, if coronavirus behaves like all these other viruses, if you get it, you have the presence of the antibodies in your system, supposedly, but there's some weird stuff going on. So who knows? For the sake of argument, let's say if you've been exposed to it, you have the antibodies in your system, and you're therefore, there's an argument that you are immune.
Right.
Now, again, there's a lot to be learned about this virus, and there's probably some, there's a ton we don't know. But let's play with this narrative, right? So assuming you can gain immunity by basically contracting it, and immunity can really be powerful for a lot of athletes, right? To say, I'm immune, like, don't worry about me getting sick and missing
2 weeks
till, you know, really having some horrible like health outcomes. Mm-hmm. I got it supposedly, and I don't have any symptoms, and I'm fine. I'm 100%, and I've got immunity. There's some power to that. And if you're a player that does not have immunity, would you be crazy enough to purposefully contract coronavirus to gain immunity?
Jesus, dude, what a question. I mean, like you're asking if players would be willing to go out and like, I don't know, get coughed on or lick a surface or something to purposely contract this disease that we're like literally sheltered at home for the last 2 months to try to avoid. It seems insane, right? It seems crazy. I would actually say, yes, some might be that crazy. And I would even go as far as to say, the research would tell us that we shouldn't call it crazy. That when people have goals that are really important to them, like performing well, getting paid, you know, excelling at your craft as a pro athlete, that, yeah, they'd be willing to risk something like that. They're willing to risk harming themselves, which might happen, right? Like generally the people who get this really bad are old, but young people have died, have gotten really sick from this as well. So it's still a risk to try to contract it, but I would say absolutely they'd be willing to do it. And again, I would say it's not even something I would call crazy, which is gonna be maybe surprising to hear, but I think the research supports that one pretty heavily.
Hit us with the goods. So like, what does the research say about, what does the research say in terms of confirming this?
I mean, the seminal like series of old studies comes from like the 30s and 40s when they could basically do anything to anybody or any animals they wanted to. No ethical standards back then, which is fantastic. Just kidding, not fantastic, but made for some interesting studies. They did a series of studies with rats actually, and you know, rats' cognitive ability is probably not on par with ours, but the results I think show something interesting nonetheless. So they do the series of studies with rats where they starve the rats. They make them really, really, really hungry. Not ideal, but they do it. They make them really, really hungry.
You're gonna get some emails from PETA.
Fuck, I know. They're always after me, man. The fur coats do it. But anyways, so they put the rats on one side of an electrical grid. Now, if you're a rat, you don't want to go across an electrical grid because it's going to hurt like hell. They put the rat on one side of the grid and they put food on the other side.
Do the rats know it's an electrical grid?
They know that it can hurt them because they
figure it out. They like touch it.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. They rear back and whatever. So if the rats are hungry enough, they are willing to run across this electrical grid in order to get the food and satiate their hunger. Wow. And the thinking way back then, and again, this is supported by more recent research, some of which I've actually been an author of, shows that, I know, bravo, right? Nobody's read it, I'm sure. But the thinking is that basically because the rats are so hungry, the goal of getting food is so important to them that they don't care what lengths they have to go to get it. They're willing to get hurt. They're willing to do anything basically to satiate that need and to fulfill that goal. And again, like research more recently with people supports the same thing. Like we did a study with former and current military personnel, asking them, like, what is it that you desire the most? Like, what would make your life perfect? What would really fulfill yourself? And so they'd write in their answers, and we'd ask them subsequently, well, what would you do to achieve that goal? Like, would you be willing to risk harm to yourself, risk harm to your family? Like those kind of questions. And we find this pretty strong correlation between how much they say they want to achieve their goal that they've listed and how far they're willing to go to achieve it. Again, suggesting that like they're not thinking of this as irrational or crazy behavior. To them, they're willing to go to this length because it's gonna fulfill something that they really, really, really desire. And for players, like performing, not missing time, getting paid, those seem like things they really fucking desire.
Yeah.
And they might be willing to go that far.
Yeah. Can I make a like crazy illogical comparison between a study, like mm-hmm. the monkey study that you talked about earlier, between the wire monkey with yeah. the milk and the cloth monkey with no milk? And the monkey was like, oh, I like the cloth one because it feels good and I feel this connection. But every once in a while, it had to go over to get milk.
Right.
Are you saying that like if there was like spikes or something in the way, or if there was this electrical grid, it would still go over and get the milk and then go back to the cloth? Like it did, however, prefer the cloth monkey. So
right.
How does this all work out? Like how does goals play into fulfilling our needs? How do goals play into like nourishment? And I mean
you can think of motivation, human motivation, as involving both our needs and our goals, right? And sometimes they overlap, sometimes they're conflated. So sometimes the things that are driving our behavior are our needs, like social connection, food, water, etc., shelter. And other times when those, like, think of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You remember that from intro psych? So when our, like, really basic needs are met, like social connection, food, et cetera, then we have a little bit more flexibility to pursue other goals.
Explain that a little bit more. So, sorry, at the bottom you have basic
food,
needs.
Basic needs, like food, water, shelter, those kind of things. And then like a level up, it gets more and more complex basically. To the extent that like your basic needs are fulfilled, you can pursue like psychological needs, like human connection, stuff like that. Then you can pursue other kinds of goals and needs related to career, related to love, like stuff like that. That's important, but it's less basic. Mm-hmm. And so as those bottom kind of needs are fulfilled, people have more ability and flexibility to go in search of other kinds of goals. And in this case, to the extent that players have shelter, they have food, they have water, performing, getting paid, being able to support their families becomes a really important and motivating and important goal. And would again potentially lead them to be willing to do these seemingly irrational things to help them to reach those goals.
All right, so if I'm an NFL player, I've got food, I've got a roof over my head, but I need to, you know, provide for my family badly. Like I need to pay the bills. I'm going to be doing these seemingly crazy things, like possibly running across that electrical grid,
right,
and contracting coronavirus to gain immunity and show teams like I'm good. Start me, play me.
Yeah. I'm not going to miss two weeks. Yeah, exactly. Right. You don't have to worry about me through the rest of this pandemic until we get a vaccine. Like, I'm straight. You don't have to worry about me getting sick.
I'd love to do this. We've talked about this, but like, we have to survey people and say, what is the minimum amount of money, all cash, that you would accept to voluntarily contract coronavirus, and see what that number is. And then, you know, collect like age. I'm guessing like younger people, you know, the number is going to be lower. I think it would be lower than we would expect, because I think a lot of people are like, I'll probably be fine. Like, you know, there's a lot of people dying from it, and it's crazy. It's morbid, but like, I think when people are tested, like athletes are tested, mm-hmm. where it's like, I need to make this money now. It's a small window of your career.
That's right.
If you think about NFL players, the average number of years a running back is playing in the league, is active in the league, is like 3 years.
That's it. Or something.
So you've played football your whole life. It's like, I've got 3 years to make a big chunk of money, because that's my primary skill set. And like, I'm young and I'm healthy. I've got to do it now. And so,
that's a strong motivator. And that really, I think, can push guys to do things that, again, seem on the face of them to be irrational, but I really would argue they're not. They're goal driven. Like, they make logical sense. It's a simple if then thing in these guys' minds. Like, if I get this, I won't get sick, and then I'll be able to play more and get paid and be able to support myself and support my family.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like it's fucking nuts.
Well, we've seen this before in sports, right? Steroids.
Yeah, right.
Steroids are, you know, a calculated risk that players take. And there are, you know, published outcomes on effects to the liver, like liver abnormalities and obviously like issues with your testes and like all this kind of not good stuff. There was one study that said like a small number, but people have died from misusing. Mm-hmm. I think it was anabolic, you know, the type of steroid that athletes tend to use, anabolic steroids. I think it was like 12 deaths over like something like a 20-year period. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of press on it. It's like, we don't need to do this. It's not healthy for us. But players do it because it's like, I can make millions and millions and millions of dollars, because in the end, it's like, they're not stupid. It's about performance. And like, teams mm-hmm. will pay for performance. If you hit home runs, mm-hmm. you score touchdowns, that sells tickets. That's the bottom line. Even baseball, like it's three strikes, you're out rule with getting caught with illegal substances. So a player goes, all right, you're going to, what is it? Like it's 80 and then like 160
something like
and then
that.
Banned for life or something.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, I'll take a, you know, I'll take a half season suspension to make $10-20 million more because I took steroids and now I can hit the ball 15 feet farther. Like, I think like, you know, I think as a society, we bash them all the time for taking steroids and for cheating and whatever. And I think it was on the Ken Burns documentary on baseball, the later innings, like the 10th inning or something like that. Chris Rock says, look, if I told you I give you a pill and it would make you the best at your job, right? It's going to make you the best psychologist in the world. But like, you know, there's some, maybe some health risks here or there, you know, people won't really like you if they find out, you're telling me you wouldn't be curious about taking that?
Of course.
I mean,
of course.
I don't think like you and I are not running backs where like we have a 3-year window to just do everything we've got to do to support ourselves and our families. Mm-hmm. But I think we can definitely foresee a scenario where guys would seemingly just like do crazy stuff to accomplish goals. And to your point, and tell me if I'm wrong, but it really feels like that overlap between motivation and needs. It's everything. And so, they'll cross that electrical grid.
They might. They very well might. And I mean, I think we can look at many different situations through that lens that seem to be on the face of them crazy. The steroid thing, I was just, as you're talking, thinking about the Astros current and recent Astros situation, like these guys are obviously cheating and it's really bad that they did that. But my guess is that as that's developing, they're not thinking about it as like, man, we really shouldn't do this. We're going to get you know, suspended, fired, whatever. They're thinking of it as, well, this can help us win. Winning is the ultimately important goal to us. Why not? Why not take a step in that direction? Right. And I think a lot of times things like that and things like these big risks that people take in pursuit of their goals happen in small steps, right? And so probably that's what happened with the Astros situation. Same thing with steroids. Some guy injected a little bit. He's like, all right, I hit the ball a little further. I'm going to take a little more, right? So on and so forth. And so it can make it seem even less like it's something crazy or irrational. It's like, all right, well, I'm just doing a little bit of this. Damn, it really helped. I'm going to do a little more.
Go it's almost it. Like it's a drug.
Almost like it's a fucking drug. Oh, wait. It is.
Right. Wow. This was fun. I'm glad we did this. Yeah. Maybe we could do this again sometime.
Yeah, like if, you know, people like it and stuff, I guess.
I don't care. I'm just going to.
Yeah, really. Fuck them, I guess. Yeah.
I think a lot of this is referenced from the articles that we write on Psychology Today. A lot of the topics that we covered are already published out there. We're going to put some more articles out. I think we're going to be sticking with this theme of like, what is the world of sports going to look like during coronavirus? Only because there ain't a lot going on. But I think there is a lot going on. I think we've sort of unpacked this, and this has really been a central theme of our writing, is the psychological effects of sports during COVID. And so yeah. I think it is interesting. I hope that, you know, especially for, you know, my teams out there, that they're thinking about these things and that this is front of mind, and that, you know, we're taking players' health short and long term into consideration, because your boy's got a fantasy dynasty baseball team, man. And it's wants his young players doing well and healthy for the future. So please take care of yourselves, and but give us baseball back, please, or give us
please. I'm tired of watching 2012 games of Tim Lincecum pitching against the Braves or whatever. Although that's pretty amusing, but I remember that what happened in that game. So
yeah, all right, cool, man. All right, talk to you soon.
Enough. All right, man.